Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Sri Bhakti Vaibhava Ki
Jai,
Granta Raja Sri Bhagavatam Ki
Jai,
Giridas Maharaj Ki
Jai,
Jai Nitai Gopremana
Ki
What we discussed yesterday.
And he said that we discussed that for those who have a sincere desire to approach the Lord, but who are also caught up in this material complexity of material desires, for all the complexities that you go through, the Lord still facilitates for them to make progress in spiritual, in Krishna consciousness.
Mm.
And that way he removes the hallucination of Maya, materialism.
So if one becomes Krishna consciousness, there is no social obligation.
So what does that mean to you?
When I don't worry about other things like temporary things.
Any other thoughts?
He gives the benefits only in such a way that you come to a devotional service. He doesn't have what other desires of ours.
Mm.
It is going to lead us away from him.
Because the Mahamudra has slightly mixed desire, in his devotional service, slightly mixed, and that he goes, well, wanted to fulfill Lord Brahma's request that he procreate, and therefore needed a wife. Even though it wasn't really his desire, I would conclude from the two chapters that he was doing his duty despite that. It was a poor devotee, but he had a slightly discontented.
Yeah, it's not pure devotional service. Pure devotional service means that one is situated in one's Swarupa. Swarupa means his eternal relationship with Krishna. And at this point in time, he's acting under a bodily designation. So therefore, it is not pure devotional service, but it's also not, Prabhupada says, not gross desire. Got that. Any other points?
Who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, this material world is useless for them.
Mm. They probably make very powerful statements in that section that we just held last night.
For devotees, death is all attractive.
Mm.
For non-devotees, it's unattractive.
Yeah. Any other points?
We discussed about even prasadam, which was the topic yesterday. We came to the conclusion that being ranged from non-devotees, that he improved by the consciousness, it affects our advancement in Krishna consciousness. And the example that was given about Krishna Vidana.
Not a good program. Good. Other points?
We cannot take up Krishna consciousness seriously if we are not disgusted with the material world. Because the nature of Maya is one day we feel attracted,
mm-hmm.
and one day we feel detached, but the next day we are feeling again attracted to Maya. So Prabhupada says we have to develop a healthy pessimism about the material world to believe that we can take up Krishna consciousness. We can't have both attraction to the material world and serious Krishna consciousness.
Good. Any other points?
We discussed who takes, of someone who takes to Krishna consciousness and again he has material enjoyment, desire. He is in perplexity. But Krishna being kind to them, Krishna fulfills all his own desires, which are not detrimental in the devotional service. And the other desires, they are fulfilled, but that does not ignite further desire.
Mm.
So in that way, he really cuts the jiva from the desire, vicious cycle.
Mm.
Mm.
Anything else?
Srila Prabhupada made a point that was a very strong point, that the devotees actually do not die as long as they keep serving life after life.
Mm. Or hopefully one eternal life.
Yeah.
And the devotees don't have social obligation because they surrender and serve God.
So we see that in this chapter, it's discussing, Maitreya is being asked by Vidura about the union between Mother Devahuti and Kardama Muni. Because Kardama Muni and Devahuti, they are such exalted personalities that by their union, the Supreme Personality of God Himself appears from the combination of these two great souls. So specifically he wants to hear about the birth of Kapiladev, the appearance of Kapiladev, and his instructions and his teachings. So therefore he's inquiring about their situation. So Prabhupada describes in the early part of the chapter that they were very accomplished in sense control through Ashtanga Yoga, but their Ashtanga Yoga was not simply it wasn't a personal type of practice, but rather it was based on devotional service, and therefore they attracted the Lord Himself to come. Then it describes how Kardama Muni has darshan of the Lord Himself, and then he begins to offer many prayers to the Lord, and he discusses that even though it is not proper to approach the Lord with desires, but still, in order to fulfill his duty to Lord Brahma, his father, then he must, or he chooses to approach the Lord with a request. And that request is that he wants a good wife, yeah, or a qualified wife. Mm-hmm. Someone who can assist him in performing his duty of populating the universe with pious entities. So therefore he prays to the Lord. And then tonight we'll see, last night the Lord began to respond, and then tonight we'll see the further response of the Lord in terms of answering the requests of Kardama Muni. So tonight we'll cover verses 24 to 34.
Do I have a question?
Yes, sir.
Yesterday we discussed about prasadam.
Yeah.
And we said we should not eat anything from a non-devotee.
Yeah.
Just taking like my own example, I'm just aspiring to be I am a neophyte devotee. So
you're a very nice person, right? And I like your wife's cooking too.
But I'm trying to say, will it make any huge difference, like a non-devotee and myself? Because it's not in prasad being offered by the Lord Prabhupada. It's a real devotee. So how much and what difference it will make?
What's your question? I don't understand the question.
Because I am a new devotee, if I offer eat and eat. So
offer what?
Prasad. I offer the food and
bhoga.
Yeah, so sort of, I don't understand the question.
What he's saying,
I think he's saying that
senior devotee offering the senior devotee offering,
yeah,
devotee offering, and a neophyte devotee offering, will there be any difference in offering?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. I mean, the more pure the devotee is, then the more relishable the prasad comes. That's natural. The more pure the consciousness of the cook, then the more, just like our Karuna Nidhi Prabhu, who is arriving tonight in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, very auspicious personality and very saintly personality. So he was cooking, he was the head cook for the Saturday night feast for 108 years. How long was he doing that for?
17 years.
Like that. So he was the head cook for the Saturday feast. And, you know, you tasted that prasadam. And it was, I felt purified every time I took that prasadam. So I could very much correlate, or very much you could see the connection between the consciousness of the cook and the purity of the prasadam or the potency of the prasadam. Krishna relishes when it is done with bhakti. Therefore, the more bhakti one has, then the more one can taste these things. So similarly, the person who offers the food to Krishna, the pujari, then same thing. If a very exalted person offers, then you can taste the bhakti. Okay. Does that answer you?
No. Similar question, Rob. It's perfect with exalted personalities. The prasadam will be really good and tasty. And but if I offer the bhoga, and a non-devotee offer the bhoga, it won't be much different than that. So, means...
A non-devotee is not going to offer the bhoga.
No, no, it's to eat that food. I'm not even nowhere close to the...
Yeah, but I don't understand your question. I can't understand what you're trying to get at.
Well, Prabhupada, I know
Prabhupada,
I understood what
you mean.
Can I do?
I don't know, little Maya. What does that mean to say? I don't know, what are you trying to say? What's the point?
Well, I'm trying to say, if you eat a food which is cooked by non-devotee.
Yeah.
And if I cook something and...
Is there a difference?
Yes.
Yeah, there is. About 20 lifetimes of difference. There's no comparison. A non-devotee cook, a non-devotee who doesn't even believe in Krishna cooks the food and then you eat that, or you cook the food and you offer it to Krishna, it's totally different. It's totally different. One purifies you of sin, right? The other one contaminates your consciousness. It's totally different.
Mm-hmm.
There's no comparison. Obviously, the more advanced the devotee is, the difference will be there. But then, yeah, there's a big difference. Just like, you know, when you and your wife cook and you ask me to come for prasadam, I'm very happy to come to your place. But if some non-devotee says, you know, come around, I'll cook you dinner, then, you know, where's the appeal? Where's the attraction? Because it's just vulgar.
Yeah, but I think
so it's totally different.
The asking is, what if that non-devotee, just because you're coming, offers it to the Lord? He cooks it, but he offers it to the Lord. He is a non-devotee. He doesn't believe, but since all
then
of this
thing... Then Krishna doesn't accept the offering.
That's what your question was?
Yes.
Yes, but then Krishna doesn't accept the offering. Krishna doesn't accept the offering if the person doesn't believe that he's God. It's like someone says to you, well, you know, I don't really have any faith or trust, or I don't even really like you, but here's your dinner. You know, how does that make you feel? Like that. So, you know, someone who doesn't, you know, says about, you know, I don't really believe in him, he's just a picture, he's just, you know, something in your mind, it's just mythology, it's just an Indian folklore. You know, but here's the offering. I mean, Krishna says, oh, I don't want that offering. Krishna's a person. Like that. Someone says to you, well, you know, I don't really like you, but, you know, I cooked you dinner. And how do you feel? You know, so that's how Krishna will feel. That the non-devotee, he cooks to Krishna, but then he doesn't have any faith in Krishna, no bhakti, then Krishna doesn't have to take the offering. Krishna's not obliged. Just because someone puts a plate in front of him, he's not obliged. He went to Duryodhana's palace in the Mahabharata previous to the war, and Duryodhana arranged a huge feast for Krishna. And Krishna said to Duryodhana, I will not touch it because you're not doing this out of devotion. You're just doing this because you're trying to buy me against the Pandavas. And the Pandavas are my devotees, they're very dear to me, so I won't touch your offering. So Duryodhana said, capture him, like that. So when Krishna had finished with them all, by showing his, you know, his powerful form, then he went to Vidura's house and ate banana peel. You know? So that should make you understand the situation. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other points?
Can I elaborate on this point?
Everyone's
going to get confused. From what I'm understanding, he's saying that because he is almost in the stage of neophyte, and non-devotee is the same thing. But we have to, when we have to understand that, you know, we are not offering directly to the Lord. We are offering to a guru first, and guru is offering to their guru. So obviously it's going to Krishna, obviously. That's how we are getting purified to the Lord. So though we are thinking, you know, we are not offering to the Lord directly. That's why we have guru.
And plus, if you, the fact that you're offering, that is bhakti. The Krishna, even the smallest doing of bhakti, Krishna says, Ashnami, I relish it. I take it. Right? So that anything that's there in the heart, Krishna will take that. He magnifies that.
So after this offer, it becomes threshold in the guru. Even if materialist, say, first is somebody going to become a devotee, they are preaching to people, they are starting to offer. First day, even when they offer, they start accepting Krishna, they offer the first day. So how can, like, we offer offering and that offering become different? They also have accepted Krishna, they also offering. So as soon as they offer the Krishna, it will become as potent as what we are offering, isn't it?
It depends on the advancement of the devotee, that's what depends on.
Even the Prasadam, even the Prasadam. After Krishna, it becomes Prasadam anyway. Anyway, it's potent, no? If Maharaj offers, it's more potent, and if we offer, it's less potent. Is it like
Because Krishna relishes it according to the bhakti.
Mm.
Like that. Just like you know, like I told the story about what was that, Maharaj? Umapati Swami.
Mm-hmm.
So Umapati Swami, he ate Prabhupada's personal cooking,
1966,
26 Second Avenue.
Mm.
He said, I never tasted anything like that.
Mm.
So it just shows that it's not.
Mm. If an anti-body took the problem to learn the praise of the altar, wouldn't Krishna free from devotion again?
Yeah, but then that could be, that could say that they're a devotee.
Yes.
If they learn the prayers, then obviously they have some faith.
Yeah.
So it means they're...
So you couldn't really say non-devotee could offer because...
Well, at that point they're probably not a non-devotee because if they've learned the prayers, that means they must have some bhakti.
Yes.
There must be some devotion there, so... Okay.
On this point, if a neophyte is offering bhoga to Lord Krishna through the spiritual master, will the Lord take it?
Yeah, of course. Will use the bhakti. Point is, like, you can say neophyte, but if you are sincere, then that's bhakti. That's all it takes.
Because coming through the spiritual master.
Because coming through the spiritual master, Krishna also accepts your devotion also. Of course, it's because of the spiritual master that it is accepted. But if you have devotion, then Krishna relishes your offering as well. Okay. So, we'll begin with verse 24. The Lord continued, my dear Rishi, O leader of the living entities, for those who serve me in devotion by worshipping me, especially persons like you who have given up everything unto me, there is never any question of frustration. So Prabhupada points out within the purport there are different types of devotees. One is called Sakama and the other one is called
Nishkama.
Akama, yeah, or Nishkama, like that. So what is the difference between the two? Sakama means? One who has material desire. And Nishkama or Akama means? Doesn't have material desire, like that. So Krishna accepts everybody's service. And that also answers the point that we're just discussing. Krishna accepts everybody's service. Because he sees, okay, this devotee may have material desires, but Prabhupada made that interesting statement last night, that if a devotee sincerely loves Krishna, but is struggling with material desires, then Krishna will assist that devotee and mercifully accept his devotion and purify his consciousness so that he can fully surrender to Krishna in the future. Mm. So Krishna sees everyone as being his devotee. Mm. Just like Srimad Krishnamurti said to Prabhupada in 1968, how many devotees are there? How many pure devotees are there on the planet? And Srila Prabhupada said, how many devotees are there in ISKCON? Okay, that means at that time there were 70 or 80 devotees in this time. Right? So Prabhupada saw everyone as being a pure devotee, and that's how Krishna will see. And Prabhupada gave the example just like a ripe mango or an unripe mango. Right? It's just a matter of time before the mango becomes ripe. And then when it ripens, then you can say it's a pure devotee. But still, even in the unripe state, it is valuable. The devotion is valuable. And it's just a matter of time before that devotion matures and then it becomes pure devotion. Krishna will help. If the sincerity is there, if there is genuine sincerity, right? If the devotion is materially motivated, then you'll have trouble advancing. But if you're sincere, but unable to overcome your weaknesses or your difficulties or your faults by yourself, then Krishna will assist. Like that. If you try, if you really are trying, but you know, you're trying sincerely to say, Krishna, but I'm fallen, I cannot overcome these things, I'm struggling so much with these things, then he begins to help. If you show the sincerity, then he begins to assist. Actually, it's him who cleanses the heart. Prabhupada explains this in the key verses in the second chapter of the first canto. Nashta prayeshva bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. Like that. And the one before it is Srimbatam Swakataya Krishna Punyashrava. So in these verses, Prabhupada explains, actually it's Krishna who purifies the heart. Actually it's him. We are just like sparrows. Sparrows means that we try, like the sparrow tried, to empty the ocean. A sparrow can never empty an ocean, ever. It's just not. It's beyond his capacity. But he will attract the mercy of a more powerful friend, that is Krishna. So if we are sincere, then Krishna will do the work for us. He will cleanse those desires away. Like that. But we can only be, our only qualification, we can be like a sparrow. So much determination. Yes, I will continue, I will continue, I will continue. Like that. I will never give up. Krishna is testing us every day. How sincere are you actually? Are you a showbottle devotee? Like to make a big show in front of everyone? Or are you genuine devotee? Do you stick with Krishna through thick and thin? Lord Brahma describes this in his prayers in the 10th canto, that one must go on offering one's obeisances to Krishna from within his heart, right, even through difficult circumstances. Right? Even though we're going through difficulties, but within the heart, you continue to offer obeisances to Krishna. Right? This is a real test like that. This is something you have to really examine yourself with. This is real devotion. Real devotion means when you're going through your difficulties, you continue to offer your obeisances to Krishna. So the bhakti become the like the prayojana. Does it become the actual goal of life? That is the most important thing. Does it begin to override everything else in your consciousness? This is the test of devotion. Which verse is it by Brahma?
That's the Anupama.
Yeah. We're just trying to think, what number is that?
31.
10. 31. 10 chapter, 31 chapter. No, not 31st. 31st chapter is the Gopis.
18.
No, not 18. 14. Like that. It's 10, 14, I can't remember.
That's the first.
If you look in the Nectar of Devotion, and you look through the 64 items of Bhakti, and there's one item of Bhakti called, which one is it? It might be Surrender, I think, something like that. Then you see Prabhupada quotes it there. Like that. Rupa Goswami quotes it there. Okay, 10:14, I can't remember which verse it is. Won't be hard to find. Okay, any points?
Okay, can you elaborate on the Brahma principle? Like, one has to be offer business in the
difficulty. It means that Krishna is testing us all the time. Every day Krishna will test us. And it can be easier to meditate on Krishna while you are going through some easier times. Can be. Some devotees forget that sometimes when things are more easy, then we tend to be more able to fix our minds. But when difficulties come, as Burajan Prabhu was pointing out to me one time, he said, watch what happens to your mind when you go through some difficult time. Some anxiety, some distress. Watch where the mind goes. Watch where the mind takes shelter of. So even when you're going through the difficult times, do you just continue to accept it as your karma, as your suffering? And do you just continue to meditate on Krishna and offer your obeisances within your heart to Him? Krishna, I deserve far worse. Please protect me. Please keep me engaged in your service. The Lord Brahma said, if you do that, then Dayabhak means that the kingdom of God becomes your rightful claim. Like that. Just like the sun, Prabhupada explains, or Lord Brahma explains that the son naturally receives the inheritance of the father. So just like the devotee has this type of bhakti, it's very pure bhakti towards Krishna, then the kingdom of God just becomes your claim. You pass away, you go there. Okay. Is that okay? Okay. Any other points? Okay. The emperor Swayambhuva Manu, the son of Lord Brahma, who is well known for his righteous acts, has his seat in Brahma Vata and rules over the earth with its seven oceans. So Prabhupada mentions within the purport, it is mentioned within the Sanskrit, that Swayambhuva Manu was, or is, auspicious, mangala, and celebrated. The ruler, the leader, must be auspicious and celebrated. That's part of his qualification. We take shelter of someone. If we take shelter of someone, they must be auspicious and celebrated. Otherwise, it's very difficult for us to take shelter of someone like that. If someone is inauspicious, and if they had a bad reputation, we cannot take shelter of them. But if someone has these qualities, then we can take shelter. And we can surrender to them. So you must see, do they have these qualifications? And where do these qualifications come from? The auspiciousness comes from?
Bhakti.
And the celebrity comes from?
Bhakti.
From bhakti? Yeah. It comes from Krishna. Krishna empowers someone, right? When they represent him properly. When they're a dutiful representative, a good representative, then Krishna gives them this auspiciousness, all good qualities. And he gives them reputation. Like that. They become reputable. Right? Everyone wants to take shelter of that personality. Because they're very auspicious, they're so famous. Because they're so auspicious, right? This is all becoming because of their obedience to Krishna, and therefore we develop faith and we will take shelter of it. So Swayambhuva Manu is such an exalted personality. The Lord only chooses very exalted living entities to take these positions within the universe. Just like the leaders we have currently on Earth, right? Kali Yuga leaders, if they took the higher post in the universe, then the universe is just going to disarray. So Krishna just keeps them on earth where they can't cause so many problems. And even there they cause problems. But if you put them up higher then. So those who are in the higher positions, they're pious. They're very exalted personality. Because their responsibility is much greater. You know, like the most powerful man on earth is George Bush. Right? So he has a certain amount of power. But compared to what the demigods have, I mean, they're really wielding power. Even Prabhupada said if there's a nuclear war and the bombs start flying through the air, Prabhupada said if the demigods want, they can just catch them mid-air and just throw them into outer space. That's potency. You know, we're fearful of, you know, nuclear weapons. But for Indra, he just like catches the ghost past and just throws them into outer space. That's as difficult as existing. That is potency. So Krishna only gives those kind of personalities, that kind of potency. The day after tomorrow, which is Thursday, or Brahmana, that celebrated emperor who is expert in religious activities will come here with his queen, Shatarupa, wishing to see you. He has a grown-up daughter whose eyes are black. She is ready for marriage and has good character and all good qualities. She is also searching for a good husband. My dear sir, her parents will come to see you, who are exactly suitable for her, just to deliver their daughter as your wife. Gokula Rani Matiji, do you like to read it?
The selection of a good husband for a good girl is all I can trust to the parents. Here it is clearly stated that Manu and his wife are coming to see Cardinal Moon to offer their daughter because the daughter was well qualified and the parents were searching out a similarly qualified man. This is the duty of parents. Girls are never thrown into the public street to search out their husbands. For when girls are grown up and are searching out for a boy, they forget to consider whether the boy they select is actually suitable for them. Out of the urge of sex desire, a girl may accept anyone, but if the husband is chosen by the parents, they can consider who is to be selected and who is not. According to the Vedic system, therefore, the girl is given over to a suitable boy by the parents. She is never allowed to select her own husband independently.
That's one of the points here.
The Vedic culture.
6 years old, she was at this age. 6 years old, she was at this age. Yeah, that's part of it.
It is the parents' responsibility to find suitable husband for the girl. Vedic culture.
Important Vedic cultural point. Anything else?
It's only talked about girls here. It's the same thing for boys as well.
Yeah, same thing. Arranged by the parents.
The same Mahabharata, the Swayambhara.
Yeah, Swayambhara.
Oh. Guidelines are given by the parents for freedom for
them. Brahmins, Vaishnavas, Sutras, cannot.
Sometimes we see in the congregation also that there is this dilemma that we have seen several boys but we don't see the horoscope, or we have seen a non-devotee who is having good qualities but a devotee who is not having good qualities. These kind of dilemmas we hear very often in the congregation. Some people, despite being in the temple for spending lot of money in the temple, still they say that no, we will go by the choice of our parents, and the parents say that we have had bad experience with devotees, so we will go for a good natured non-devotee boy because later on he will become a devotee because my daughter will be. So how do we
Yeah, I mean Kali Yuga means everything is mixed up, everything is compromised, like that. It's always been always these difficulties, kind of difficulties and compromises there in Kali Yuga. But traditionally, Prabhupada is speaking about a Vedic society where the parents would choose the daughter and the son, who would arrange for them to get married. And that system is superior because Prabhupada already explained earlier, first thing they look at is the Jyotish. Yeah, they look at the horoscope and they see is there some sort of match, right? And then in the village, as the children are growing up, then the elders in the village will look at the natures of the two children, right? The boy and the girl. Let's see, what is the boy like? What is the girl like? Are they compatible? Will they make a good match? And then if everything is blessed by the elders and if the Jyotish is favorable, then the arrangement can be made. But now in Kali Yuga, then, you know, everything just becomes complicated. That's basically Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is just basically complicated. Everything, every facet of life is complicated, basically. So you try to work it out the best you can. If it's your responsibility as a spiritual guide, then you have to give guidance as much as you can. But you deal, sometimes, see the thing, people come to you for guidance, in Kali Yuga, they come and say things, you know, can you work this problem out, can you work this problem, and say, okay, so what's the problem? And they start getting into it, and then it's like, you know, it's like, how am I supposed to work this out? You know, it's so complicated and so, you know, difficult and all this. And so, you know, you have several options. You know, one of them is when you go and live at the farm, where there's less people to annoy you. And the other option is that you try to assist. But it is quite green, like that. And you see that it's interesting, because in 1972, Prabhupada started this kind of 1965, but in 66 kind of got it going a little bit more. 72, Prabhupada stopped getting involved in the marriages. Totally washed his hands of the whole thing. Right? Because it was all, he said, out of disgust.
Divorce.
Yeah, because of divorce, right? So this is what it's like. Like, you're trying to help devotees, you're trying to help things. But, you know, sometimes it really just becomes a point where you go, what am I supposed to do here? You know? So some of our leaders also are getting like this. You know, some of them like, you know, you guys work it out, or they put you into these hands. Chalpati's system is very good, because, you know, so much counselling, so much authority at every level. That's really what you need, like that. So, as spiritual guides, we should try to help the devotees. Yeah. And, you know, I personally try to help the devotees. I don't, you know, walk away from them. But when you've been a devotee, you know, like, I feel like I'm old. I'm only 38, but I really feel like I'm old. Because I get pretty tired. You know, you're dealing with all these problems, and everyone says, I can't help. You know. Devotees come in and say, can you work this out for me? I say, okay, so what's the problem? And they start telling you, think, oh, how am I supposed to work this out? You know, Kali Yuga is so complicated. It's very draining, I bet. So the spiritual guide, one thing you have to do is you have to, as we said in previous classes, you don't compromise your spiritual life for anything. Right? You'll help, but only to the degree that does start taking you under. So try to help the devotees all the way. Always help the devotees. I mean, that's our duty, and we feel like that naturally. But when it gets too complicated, then sometimes you have to say, well, you know, I can only advise this much, and then you're going to have to make your decisions. And really, you have to give decisions to, because people are adults. Just like there's one devotee I know, and another devotee, and they're forming a relationship. You know, one of the boys and one of them, they're forming a relationship. And one devotee was saying to me, he was saying, oh, we should tell them this and we should tell them that. And I said, well, they're adults. You know, I mean, they're in their 20s, they're not children. Yeah, they can make some decisions for themselves at that point in time. You have to tell them every single thing. And the other point is, you can tell them everything, they're not going to follow half of it anyway. So it's not like, I'm going to say, you have to do this and you have to do that. But I'll give guidance and you give general principles like that. And depending on how much shelter the person takes of you and how much they do take your guidance and how obedient they are. See, the guru can only help the disciple. The disciple is obedient. Yeah? Just like Kumar Krishna Maharaj, I remember he said one time, he said that as a guru, he felt like he was, I think he said, like masked or gagged. He said, I only say one-fifth of the things I should say. He said, if I actually said to the disciples what they need to hear, he said, it'd be very difficult for them. So a good disciple is someone who the guru can say what needs to be said, and they accept it. Prabhupada actually points this out, that an advanced disciple, the guru can just chastise, and that is sufficient. Yeah, what are you doing like that? Immediately they rectify, done. But you know, in Kali Yuga, you know, if the guru speaks to you a little heavy sometimes, you know, everyone says, oh, I know he's not a good guru. Or, you know, or I won't go near him anymore. You know, I like to hear his classes, but I'm not going to go and ask any questions because he gets on my case. So what's the guru supposed to do? Does that help to say something? I can't remember what the question was now. Does that help?
Yeah.
But can't we leave that if the karma are not involved also? Whatever happens, like, I mean, because sometimes it may come to a situation that we feel that we may worsen the situation. So just leave it as it is and do what the karma takes. I mean,
no, it means that we should give instruction, but it means we have to be qualified to give instruction. Huh? Because if you're qualified, then you'll know what to say and how to guide the person so that they will be benefited. You know, if we leave people just to their own karma, everyone will just be finished. You have to intervene. Just like one devotee said to me, he said, oh, I want to tell you something, but you can't tell anyone else. Talking about another devotee. Said, oh, you know, they've got some problems. I want to tell you, but if I tell you, you can't tell anyone else. And I've said this same point to this devotee several times. I've said, don't say that to me. Right? Because the devotee is a junior devotee. And I say, you know, because if you tell me something about that person, and then I have to help that person, then of course I'm going to say something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'll tell you that they're in problem, but you don't say anything. Well, then don't tell me. You know, because you know, someone's about to fall off the cliff, right? And then what am I supposed to do? Not say anything? Right? That's not, and I keep telling this person, it's not the way I was trained by my guru. My spiritual master, Swami Krishna Maharaj, he was so, one of his godbrothers said about him, he cared about devotees so much, he would tell the truth. Right? It's rare to find people in this world who care about you so much, they'll tell you what you need to hear. Huh? Most people won't tell you what you actually need to hear. But someone who really cares about you will actually say those things. So I keep saying to this devotee, don't tell me not to tell them. Like, you know, if they're in trouble, of course I'm going to go and say something to them. Like that. So it means that we should guide the devotees.
What if you say something and they go and follow it and then they end up something else, then you would feel guilty?
No, that means your advice is not good. That means you shouldn't be giving advice.
So that's why, isn't it better than that?
Yeah, then it's better for you not to say anything. But you should direct them to someone who can give them guidance. That's the point. Someone should guide them. That's the point. The main point is you should listen. That's the main point. You should listen. If you get guidance, right? Just like people like to say, Shiksha Guru, Shiksha Guru. Right? You know, you have your Diksha Guru. Okay, everyone listens to the Diksha Guru. But then they say, oh, this person's my Shiksha Guru. And that person. But then when the Shiksha Guru speaks, they're no. You know? So then don't say it. Don't say Shiksha Guru, don't say this is my guide or anything like that. If the relationship is there, then the relationship is there. Right? You don't pick and choose the instructions. You must follow. That's the point. And then don't start going to the people who only give you the advice that you want to hear. Yeah, that's very convenient. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll go to this one, I'll go to that one, then I'll start playing everyone off. You know, oh, that one, I didn't like that, so I'll go to that one. What's that? How do you expect to make advancement? Okay. I hope these things are assisting. Is this addressing the point?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know it.
Huh?
You know it. You know the cases before us.
What's that?
You know the cases which we have discussed before us.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is what I'm saying, is it making sense? Is it relevant?
Yeah.
Okay. Otherwise I should just keep going to the next place.
Srila Prabhupada had very cultured parents. And he was brought up devotionally.
Hmm.
And his parents chose his wife. And I was reading Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. He didn't like his wife. And he in fact wanted to basically, you know, just remarry. And his father explained.
No, he didn't want to remarry. He went, before the marriage was arranged, he said to his father, I want to marry a different girl.
Hmm.
And then what did his father say to him? Yeah, he says, better you marry this girl, because then you'll be detached. It'll be easy for you to renounce.
That's the point.
That's the point. And then, interesting, what did Prabhupada do? Yeah, but what did he do? What did Prabhupada do? Huh? He followed his father. That's the point. Prabhupada could have, because Prabhupada was very strong-minded. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada said that about himself. He's very, if you look at Prabhupada's jyotish, mm-hmm. Prabhupada's a very strong-minded person. Right? Prabhupada used to say that about himself. You know, that was the way Prabhupada was, you know. But But he followed his father, right? And that's what it means to be a guru. You cannot be a guru until you're a disciple. You cannot be a father until you're a son. Right? You must follow. So he followed exactly what was said, and then everything turned out auspiciously. Okay. Okay.
In this Vedic tradition, what is the ideal difference in age between the guy and the girl?
Yeah, in the Vedic civilization, the boy was about 25, because it says first 25 years of brahmachari, and the girl was about 16. That was the ideal back then. Now follow what your guru says. That's what you follow now, in these days. Whatever your guru says, then you follow that. Okay, where are we up to? 28. That princess or holy sage will be just the type you have been thinking of in your heart for all these long years. She will soon be yours and will serve you to your heart's content. Now we can look in the first paragraph.
The Lord awards all benedictions according to the heart's desire of a devotee. So the Lord informed Katamuni, the girl is coming to marry with you, the princess, the daughter of Emperor Swayambhuva, and so just suitable for your purpose. Only by God's grace can one get a nice wife, just as he desires. Similarly, it is only by God's grace that a girl gets a husband suitable to her heart. Thus it is said that if you pray to the Supreme Lord in every transaction of our material existence, everything will be done very nicely and just suitable to our heart's desire. In other words, in all circumstances we must take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and depend completely on Him, a completely honest decision. Man proposes, God disposes. The fulfillment of desires, therefore, will be entrusted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the nicest solution. Kardamuni desired only a wife. But because he was a devotee of the Lord selected a wife for him who was the Emperor's daughter, the princess. Thus Kardamuni got a wife beyond his expectation. If we depend on the choice of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we will receive benedictions in greater opulence than we desire.
Mm. One of the points here.
In English we say marriages are made in heaven. Whatever happens by the will of the Lord. So like in even Prabhupada's case, they want to marry somebody else, but the will of the Lord was that he marries it, so we're going to be having this. Right?
The Lord knows better than us.
Because
he knows our past, right, and future. He knows the other person better than what we know, and we can see. So. If we take care of our spiritual life, Krishna will take
care of our material life. In Kali Yuga, for us, it's very difficult to answer because they're not directly, even you know. The mind is so tricky that in a rational way, saying that I got Krishna in a dream, tell me, it is okay. The practical application would be.
That happens to you?
Yes, sometimes. Sometimes I have to satisfy myself, the mind is very tricky, it works for you. So, in Kali Yuga, then it's the only way to ask Guru Maharaj.
Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. Three way chicken. That solves all problems.
And also, if they don't get a spouse, would you like it? Would you deserve it? You know, you can't decide, I'm a bad person, I'm a good person. You like it. Whatever you deserve it, you get it.
According to your previous activities.
And present activities.
Someone at the hand?
I think it's interesting how I said that this prepared the Supreme Lord in every transaction of the material existence, everything is designed in our state.
So it means that everything we do, then we have to learn to depend upon Krishna. and trust that Krishna will do the best thing for us. This is actually bhakti, devotion. Burajan Prabhu was saying this last year when we were in Govardhan, or Varshana, one of those places we were on the retreat. And he said, eventually you have to get to the point in your life where you say to Krishna, Krishna, now you can do whatever you want with me. And when he said that, you could hear everyone, like, everyone gulped. Because that's like a very advanced level of surrender.
That shows your strong faith in Krishna.
Yeah.
If you've got a strong faith, then everything is right.
If you have that much faith, that, no, but this is saying, Krishna, do whatever you want with me. Whatever you decide from now on in my life, whatever you want, I'll just leave it to you. Fully dependent upon you for everything. That is the level of devotion we need to come to. So, if we do have faith that Krishna will look after us, then he will look after us much more than we can imagine. Kadamamuni, he was desiring a wife, and Krishna knew that desire within the heart, but Krishna gave him far more than what he could have imagined. Right? He got the most qualified wife in the universe, Mother Devahuti. And so qualified that she would become the mother of the Supreme Lord himself. And he could not imagine, he just wanted a good wife. The Lord gave him so much.
Yeah, I was thinking about Karan, he's a good brother when Mukund passed away. Mm. He sent an email saying that I'll accept whatever Krishna says. If he wants to keep him alive, it's okay. Or if he wants to take him away, it's okay too.
Mm.
But isn't that sad that, I mean, naturally our parents and everybody else want the child to be alive, but Krishna took him. Looks after his devotees in such a way that, I mean, even though they were in that state that they would accept whichever way Krishna went, but it was sad that to see such a young boy taken away.
It is, but maybe that's just because we have material vision. Because what if that boy went back to the spiritual world? So is that sad? There's nothing sad about that. That's why Prabhupada has mentioned that even if you look in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, if you look on the calendar, generally we celebrate the disappearance day of the Acharya. Because it's the disappearance day where he enters back into the pastime. Even more prominent than the appearance day. Of course we celebrate both, Vyasa Puja and Vaishnava. But the point is that the personality goes back to the spiritual world, or if he takes a very auspicious birth, then what is there to lament actually? It means we're only lamenting for ourselves. We're not actually lamenting for them. We're lamenting for us because we are lacking. Crying for us, we're not actually crying for them because they may have attained something very auspicious. Any other questions? Okay. That princess, did we just read that? She will bring forth 9 daughters from the seed sown in her by you, and through the daughters you beget, the sages will duly beget children. With your heart cleansed by properly carrying out my command, resigning to me the fruits of all your acts, you will finally attain to me. So, Mahatmaji, can you read that?
Here the words, Iti Patrishesh Priyata. Are significant. Tirtha means a sanctified place where charity is given. People used to go to places of pilgrimage and give munificently in charity. This system is still current. Therefore, the Lord said, in order to sanctify your activity and the results of your action, you will offer everything unto me. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you sacrifice, the Lord should be given to me only. Yet in another place in Bhagavad Gita, Lord said, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices, all penances and everything done for the welfare of mankind or society. All activities, therefore, whether for welfare of family, society, country, or humanity at large must be performed in Krishna consciousness. That is the instruction given by the Lord to Kadmoni. Maharaj is still sanctified because the Lord Himself is always seated in your heart. Similarly, if we act in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the Lord and is related, then everything is sanctified. This is the indication given to Kadmoni, who acted on it and therefore received the most excellent wife and child, as will be discussed in later verses.
Hmm. So what are the points here?
Charity or anything is to be given in the name of the Lord.
Hmm.
I have a reason that Jamie was mentioning this morning. He was telling me in America we give 10% of the income as charity, and in Australia it's only 3%.
Hmm.
The as we are advancing, I think the charity work we keep getting less and less.
Hmm.
So our selfish wants are more, we're spending more on our own charity.
Hmm.
My father told me personally, whatever you eat, you must offer to Krishna.
Mm.
That ordered me. Whatever you do, offer to Krishna.
Mm.
That was offered.
If you do basically the charity on a material plane, then you earn the piety equivalent to what you have given. So that is the relationship between what you give and not just what you get. On a spiritual plane here, the Lord is telling that if you resign the fruits of all your activity to me, which is nothing, he's saying you will finally attain to me, which is uncomparable.
Mm.
So, I mean, there is no comparison between what you give to Krishna and eventually you attain him, which is the Supreme Absolute Truth.
Mm.
It's very inspiring, very motivating.
Mm.
It's a great preaching of India.
Mm. And yeah, I mean, so what do we actually do for Krishna? This is what Prabhupada points out for us. Krishna doesn't need anything.
Mm.
Now we think, oh, I gave, you know, $5,000 for Krishna. It's not actually significant in Krishna's eyes. It's just a matter that it purifies us, that's all it does. And that Krishna doesn't need the money, doesn't benefit from the money. It's only us who benefit from the charity, I think.
With the translation, I read, like, almost like Lord Krishna has given instructions earlier. That don't deserve it, don't offer the food to him.
Mm.
But there's a few other Bhagavad instructions to that. Mm.
The same person. Vishnu is speaking at this point in time. So, Prabhupada is emphasizing the purport that when one goes to a holy dharma, a holy place, one must give charity. Krishna says in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that charity, sacrifice and austerity purify even the great souls. Mm. So therefore, when you give charity, especially when you go to a holy place, you must give charity because it purifies the consciousness. It relieves you of your attachments to this world. By giving charity, then you become detached and you get so much reciprocation from Krishna. And you get so much, like, relief and enlightenment and detachment, right, from that activity of giving charity. So that also means that for those who cannot go to Vrindavan or Mayapur or Puri regularly or so often like that, we are very fortunate because Prabhupada has brought, as we were saying in class this morning, Mayapur, Vrindavan and Puri have manifested here fully. So when you come to this temple, you must give charity. You must. It's actually improper. It actually says in the Nectar of Devotion, you should not become before the deities without a gift. Mm. And then if you read in Servant of the Servant, Tamal Krishnamurti says in 1968 in Los Angeles, when they first began the temple, they used to have a bag of rice outside the temple, so whenever the devotees would enter into the temple, they could pick up some rice and offer it to the deities as they came in. So you should have this consciousness. All the time you have to give. Like that. It should not be an imposition. You should not feel that we are giving Krishna begrudgingly. Why do I have to give? There's social pressure here. Everyone's giving. Every time I walk in, they ask me to give. Like that. Actually, it's a great privilege to give to Krishna. As we said, Krishna doesn't need your money. Krishna doesn't need your service. What you are doing, you are benefiting by giving to Krishna. You're the one getting purified by giving to Krishna. You get the benefit. Like that. So that should be the mood. Whenever you come to the holy place, charity must be given. Like that.
Also, if householders make money for giving charity, householders are supposed to look after all the ashrams.
That is their dharma. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, we'll mention this in the next couple of verses before it comes up.
To me, this verse seems to be clarifying Kala Muni meditating for 10,000 years with material desires was actually him carrying out his prescribed duty. And therefore, like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna guarantees that whoever does that in whoever does his prescribed duty and surrendering all fruits to Krishna actually attains Krishna.
Was the
actually clarifying the point earlier when one of the earlier verses we were reading that Kadama Muni was going through 10,000 years of meditation with material desires. But even though they were material desires, he was actually performing his prescribed duty in that sense.
Hmm.
And therefore here the Lord is confirming that because he was doing his prescribed duty, Kadama Muni will attain Krishna.
Yeah, yeah, you're saying that. You're using the indication that when he renounces this world, then he will attain Krishna. Because the Varnashram system means that you have to progress through the different ashramas. Right? First you practice Brahmacharya, although we don't always do that in Kali Yuga now, because of the way society is set up. You know, Prabhupada established Brahmacharya ashrams, Brahmacharini ashrams. So devotees can get that training. Then we go through Grihastha life, then there has to be Vanaprastha and possibly Sannyasa, like that. So if you don't perform your duty properly as a Grihastha, then you can't become a Vanaprastha. You can't renounce if you haven't done Grihastha Dharma properly. And what is Grihastha Dharma? You have to give charity. Why do you have to give charity? Because you'll become detached. How are you going to go to the forest later on and be detached when you're elderly if you have not become detached throughout your life? So if you're trying to hold on to everything, then you can't go to the forest. You can't go to the vana like that, because you're too attached. Right? Just like people always say you can practice Krishna consciousness when you're older. It doesn't work like that. You have to practice it when you're young. Right? Prahlad Maharaj says, Kol Maharaj. Says you have to start when you're young. Right? If you don't start when you're young, it doesn't work like that. You have to give as many years to this as you can. So when you become elderly, then you can fully surrender to Krishna. It has to be a long-term plan. It has to be like running a marathon. You know, you can't just think you're just going to go and just do something. Right? You have to practice for it and prepare for it, and then you can do it. Like that. Just like I remember we used to have the book marathons when I was a brahmacharya, and I still do now, but when I was a brahmacharya I used to go out and do the book marathon. So I had to lead up to it. I couldn't just, you know, the day the marathon started, just okay, now let's start. You have to prepare for it for weeks in advance. So when you get to it, you're ready, then you can keep going. So Krishna consciousness has to be like that. You have to do your dharma now, right, in your grihastha ashram, so you can become renounced later on. Otherwise you won't become renounced. Get a point?
Can I just substantiate what you said? I think Prabhupada said that we should become detached when we have the things. You know, like if you don't have the things and you think you already know, that might not be the case. Because you might be attached, but you just don't have them.
Hmm. Sour grapes. Someone else have a point?
Is that any restore Krishna in the thing? Because by giving the fruits only, it's not necessarily pleasing the Lord. Doing service to please him is different than giving your little friend.
Yeah, it depends on the motivation. Like that. You can give the results to Krishna, or you can do it out of bhakti. That's the difference between sakama, nishkama, and then going into akama or pure devotional service. Like that. That is it. It depends on the desire and how you perform the activity. Where is the consciousness where you do the activity? Because you can do it, you can do it out of the spirit of detachment. But a spirit of detachment is not the same as bhakti. It's not the same as doing it with devotion. You can be detached from it, but that doesn't actually take you out of this material world.
Well, at this point in time, Vishnu is speaking, right?
Yeah, it's not like that. It means that if someone's a pure devotee of Vishnu or a pure devotee of Krishna, then one will go to Vaikuntha, one will go to Goloka. So there's a difference in the where you'll go to. The point is, it's the mood in the offering. That's what's important. Whether one's a Vishnu Bhakta or a Krishna Bhakta, Vaishnava or Karshna, regardless of what one is, then one will attain Krishna. It depends on the consciousness and the offering of it. Okay.
What did you say, Vaishnava
versus? Karshna.
How do you spell it?
K-A-R-S-N-A. Karshna. That means, like we say, Vaishnava is devotee of Vishnu. Karshna means devotee of Krishna. One devotee called Karshna, he told me that's the name. Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur says it. He normally would say Vaishnava. It is sometimes Bhakti, or I've seen Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur say Karshna. Because we are followers of Krishna. Okay.
Karshna is part of Vaishnava?
No, Karshna means devotee of Krishna.
Vaishnava
means devotee of Vishnu. Karshna means the body of Krishna, like that. Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur used this. Showing compassion to all living entities, you will attain self-realization. Giving assurance of safety to all, you will perceive your own self as well as all the universes in me and myself in you.
Very interesting for Buddha. He said that if you will attain self-realization and you will be just Krishna and Bhagavan in consciousness.
Yeah, but he's not perfect yet.
But if you're not perfect, how should you get compassion of Bhagavan?
Well, if he wants to come, just like in when Krishna came to Earth, not everyone was perfect. The Devas came and joined the Yadu dynasty and associated with Krishna. They weren't perfect, but they got his association. It was like special. This is the beginning of the universe. These personalities are very exalted, and because they're doing so much service for Krishna, they get his association. Like that. Just like it says in the heavenly planets, and Vamana Dev is there serving Indra. He's the doorkeeper of Indra. So it means he's the Supreme Lord. So all the demigods are associating with him continuously. But they're not fully pure yet, that they can perceive the Lord. Maybe they can't fully perceive him because their senses are not fully pure. But they can, just like we see the deity, but we don't have like full realization of the deity because we're not fully pure yet. It is possible to see the Lord even if one is not totally pure. Prabhupada says when Krishna came to earth, many people saw him but not everyone understood. But it is possible to see him. Okay. So Prabhupada gives a long purport here, and he describes that one has to perform one's duty as a
offering to Krishna.
As an offering to Krishna. Or he says in the third paragraph that devotees should become Majjhima Adhikaris. Majjhima Adhikaris means preachers. Kanishtha Adhikaris do not preach because they're too much on the neophyte platform. Basically, Kanishtha Adhikaris are devotees who are just too materialistic and they're just too caught up in their own lives. So they don't preach. Because they're more concerned with just what's going on in their life, or sometimes they get caught up in politics, or they get caught up in different things. So they're not really surrendered. So this is Kanishtha Adhikari. They're devotees, they believe in Krishna, but they're very caught up just in the material platform. A Majjhima Adhikari is someone who preaches. They do preaching, they do practical preaching. They try to help others become Krishna conscious. Prabhupada says here in the purport that all devotees should come to that cycle, where you actually help others become Krishna conscious. Right? If you become a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, it is your duty. Prabhupada said it is the family business. Just like you go to India and you have Patel and son. What does that mean? It means the sons have to take up the family business. That's the system. So Prabhupada said our family business is
preaching.
Preaching. Right? You join ISKCON, that is the business. You have to do it. That's what we do. And that's what the Majjhimadhikaris are. The Kanishadhikaris just come to the temple, see the deities, put something in the box, go and take prasad, speak a bit of prajalpa in the courtyard, and then go. That's the system. But the Majjhimas are those who preach. They try to get the others involved in service. They try to engage others. That's the Majjhima. Right, tries to preach to the other people who come. And then Prabhupada says the ultima adhikari is the one who is so exalted that everyone becomes uplifted by his association. Right? And the Lord, he has to come himself in this material world, or he has to send ultima adhikari to lift everyone up. Otherwise things don't get started. Right, if Prabhupada did not come, right, if an Uttama Adhikari did not come, ISKCON wouldn't have started. It took an Uttama Adhikari to get this all going. Right, we're struggling just to maintain it. Right, we're all the Majjhimaka Adhikaris. But no, there's no way any of us could start where Prabhupada started. I was thinking about this the other night. You know, some of us do some good service. You know, some devotees in ISKCON become very powerful. And they, you know, make so many devotees and do all these things. But I don't know if there's anyone else who can do what Prabhupada did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go to America, right, with 40 rupees and a trunk full of books, and in 10 years, open 108 temples and initiate 10,000 disciples and distribute millions of his books. I don't think any of us could do that. But it takes an ultima adhikari to get the whole thing going. That's why Krishna sends the ultima adhikaris like that. So then Prabhupada points out in the 4th, 5th, and 6th.
I have a question for
you.
When some adhikari comes into this globe, he also undergoes the same problems as the Kanaka, the Madhyama, everything, because Srila Prabhupada also undergone all phases. So how can we identify him? We cannot identify unless things happen.
Yeah, he will manifest his glories. That's the point. It's like we know when we look at Prabhupada's life, you understand he was ultima adhikari because everything he did was. Prabhupada said, I never remember a time when I did not remember Krishna. And you practically see that when you read Lilamrita, and you'll see everything in his life was pure. And then when it came time, then he fully manifested his potency. Okay, so there's no doubt that he was Uttama. Okay. So Prabhupada says in the 4th, 5th and 6th paragraphs, he says that the duty of the Grihastha is to support the renunciates. That is the duty. Now you must support the renunciates. Because the renunciates have to do their duty. And what is their duty?
Preaching.
Right? Preaching. That's all. Right? The sannyasi, the renunciates, the brahmachari, their duty is just to preach. It is our duty as grihasthas to support them. And we must do our duty. That's how we become purified. Right? So then Prabhupada says, don't just leave it up to them. Prabhupada says the grihasthas also have to preach as well. But he said they just preach in their local area. Yari Deki Tari Kara Krishna Upadesh Amara Agyari Guruhana Tara Edesh. Mahaprabhu says, you just stay in your place. Right, your desh, Prabhupada does the desh, wherever the guru gives you to preach, you stay in that place. And Prabhupada says you invite all the people in the area to come to your home. He says this in this purport. They come to your home and you teach them about Krishna. Prabhupada said the system is you do kirtan, right? You give them some katha, right? And then you give them prasad. That's the same program every time. Right? And people become purified. You see how purified they become. Just like you see Nityananda Priya Prabhu. Right, in his tiny little flat there, you know, with people hanging off the balcony. Right. Just get your desh, just get your little place like that, invite them to come, right, and then preach Krishna consciousness, right, and Vishuddha Priya Mamaji is in the kitchen, you know, like, you know, about that much space, and you know, just like, you know, cooking the prasad and giving it to all the devotees, right, and everyone else. Yeah, so many devotees, but he's... Yeah, so many exalted personalities. But I'm choosing him because, you know, he uses probably the smallest space out of all of us and probably gets the most devotees out of all of us. Like that. They're very powerful preacher. Like that. Sometimes I go past and they're all hanging off the balcony and like... This guy's up in the next balcony, you know, hanging upside down. With him.
Not yet.
Upstate. Not upstate, though. Upstate. Upstate. That was a joke. I can't fool you, Mahatma Prabhu. So then, O great sage, I shall manifest my own plenary portion through your wife Devahuti along with your 9 daughters, and I shall instruct her in the system of philosophy that deals with the ultimate principles of categories. So here, he is speaking about the incarnation of
Kapiladeva.
And Kapiladeva's incarnation will teach Sankhya. Sankhya literally means
analysis.
Yeah, literally it means counting. Literally. Sankhya. Means to count, to analyze. So that's what Sankhya philosophy is. There are 24 material elements. So you analyze each of those things, you see they're all different to spirit. Analyze the difference between matter and spirit. That is Sankhya. Prabhupada says in the purport there are 2 Kapiladevas. One was an atheist, one was a theist. So we follow the theist who is in the Bhagavad Gita, who is just about to begin speaking in a few chapters, and his teachings are the ideal Sankhya philosophy because it leads to God realization. And you'll see when we go through the teachings of Kapiladeva, they're amazing teachers. This year will be a very ecstatic year. Already I'm getting so much taste out of the 3rd canto of the Bhagavad Gita. And when I go ahead a little bit to see what's coming up, then there's so many wonderful instructions coming up. So thank you for performing the austerity to come and to study the Bhagavad Gita in this course. I'll just finish, and then if there's any questions, then because we just have to. Maitreya went on, thus having spoken to Kadamba Muni, the Lord who reveals himself only when the senses are in the Krishna consciousness, departed from that lake called Bindu Sarovara, which was encircled by the river Saraswati. While the sage stood looking on, the Lord left by the pathway leading to Vaikuntha, a path extolled by all great liberated souls. The sage stood up listening as the hymns forming the basis of the Sama Veda were vibrated by the flapping wings of the Lord's carrier, Garuda. So unless one, Prabhupada says in the purport, unless one is liberated from material desires, then you cannot perceive Krishna. So Kadamba Muni had become liberated. He was a devotee. And Prabhupada points out in the purport that an impersonalist cannot see the form of Krishna. A devotee, even if he's not fully pure, can see the form of Krishna, because he has become liberated by taking to the process of devotional service. So therefore he becomes a liberated soul. And Prabhupada gave that example we gave before of the mango. Okay, maybe he's not completely pure, but he's on the path of perfection. And he will become pure. And that's the point. And that's why Kadamba can see the Lord. Even though he's not completely pure, but his bhakti is very strong. So then he will completely become purified in this very lifetime, because he's on the correct path. And that is the potency of devotional service. Any questions?
Yeah. Oh, I have a question. The attained Sankhya and the sixth
sorry, the essay is Kapila and sage Kapila Deva. Both taught the Sankhya Yoga?
Yeah, Prabhupada says they both taught a Sankhya philosophy. But one was an atheist and the other one was a theist. So one's conclusion was atheism, void or nirvisesha or something, and the other one's conclusion is bhakti. So one means the bhakti and the other one means two.
Are they contemporary?
I'm not sure when the other one was. There's six Vedic philosophies and the atheistic Kapila is one of those philosophies. We could look into them in detail. We'll see, maybe we'll look into them in detail, but I don't know a lot about them. I've never studied them in detail.
He came before Srila Vyasa, the
Prince Kapila. Yeah, the atheistic one. Okay. Any other points?
In this way, not a strong devotional service makes a man liberated, even though he has just started his things. Maybe he might have done lots of wrong things in the previous life.
Yeah, but the point is that because he's on the pure path, if he is sincere, that path, if he stays on that path, that will take him all the way back to the spiritual world. It will purify him completely. So he's liberated. When Krishna looks at you, like you go and see the deity, when Krishna sees you see the deity, that's one thing. When Krishna sees you, he sees you as liberated. Because for him, like for us it's many years, but for him it's a few moments. He will see that you will become a liberated soul. So he already sees you in your perfect position. But from our point of view, it will take some time. Okay, so next Monday we'll start from verse 35 and we'll finish the chapter next week. We'll either do it in one class or in two classes. We'll just have to see how it works out. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.